normally considered a bad luck day, but we've turned that around. It's going to be a good luck day. Good things are going to be happening at Club Helsinki in this musical event. And it's also, that event is also a fundraiser for the community dinner. So a partial fundraiser for the community dinner. Part, some of the proceeds will go to the community dinner. So come out, support your local, homegrown, great emerging artist, as well as supporting a great cause.
Okay. Okay.
Well, thank you.
Terrific. Terrific. We'll try to keep all that in mind as we go forward through the calendar over the next few weeks or so. So certainly I'm going to ask Randall to either email me or give me some kind of a printout that kind of, spells out the events and their occurrences so that I can share with you here on from WGXC, but also with friends and neighbors who may not get this information, may not be listening to us right now. So we'll try to repeat it. Maybe Lynn will want to have someone repeat it over the next month or so, so that people at least are informed that these wonderful things are happening in this community and they should participate, in them. Otherwise, we're not going to have them. It's just as simple as that. It's like WGXC. If we don't participate in sharing the responsibility and support for this radio station, we're just not going to have it. So there are lots of people out there who are trying to bring this community to a place where they feel it needs to be, and it's happening. And you all have to play a part. The community, it takes more than a village, someone said, or it takes a village. Well, these days, it takes even more than a village. So that's what we're calling on, the Village Plus, to help us be able to get out there and celebrate these artists, these young people who are making a life for themselves with their creativity and sharing it with the community. And, you know, that's where they get their impetus to move on from here. So I want to thank you, Randall.
And I would be remiss in not thanking you and for all that you do for the community, being involved in the community going way back, and all the wonderful things that culturally and consciously that you've contributed to the community, as well as this great show that you do here. And I appreciate the time. And you soon, I don't know if people know this, but you shared this with me yesterday. You're still going to celebrate a very important milestone of your radio activities very soon. Is it next year? It's going to be 10 years?
10 years, yeah.
10 years in WGXC.
Yeah, 10 years.
Well, thank you for doing all the great work and the great music that you play. And you are a treasure to the community.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you very much. Same here. Mutual.
Mutual. Back at you. Thank you very much.
That was Randall Martin, who shared with us some of the upcoming events that are going to be occurring in our community here in Hudson, New York. So hopefully some of you copied that down or you have it on your archive. You can go back and listen to it if you're hearing it online. And we will, again, repeat these announcements to you over the next coming, month. So you'll know. And there may be posters and signs around. You can call Helsinki for information around what the tickets will, cost, etc. So get the information. Try to be there. It's important that we be there in number to show support.
Hi, I'm Shersha Mizan from Hudson. You are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cornelius Eady of New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
People drive by, T-Mac on the radio. Got so much on your mind, nothing's really going right. Looking for a ray of hope. Whatever it is you may be going through, I know it's not gonna let it get the best of you. You're an overcomer.
Praise the Lord and good morning. good Wednesday morning, beloved. Oh, my goodness. We're just having a good time up here in the studio with my in-studio guest. Listen, in case you didn't know, this is Pastor Kim, your perpetual optimist here at WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre Hudson, Catskill. Ah, we are in the house. We are in the building. And it's just so good to be back. And I hope everything is going on with you all out there in Brightside Land, WGXC family and friends, and those tuning in for the first time. We're here to make it a little bit better for you, lift you up, cheer you up. We're going to go a little deep, too, but that's all right. You dig deep to get strong foundations and form roots, right? So we're going to do that here today. But listen, don't move your dial on your device or your radio. We got a really nice show. And for the next 55, we're going to be live in studio with Mr. Alan Skerritt. Oh, my goodness. He is the music maestro of Crossroads for Rhythm here at WGXC every first and third Thursday at noon to 2 p.m. And he's laughing it up. Say hey to the folks, Brother Alan. All right, I don't think I have you on. All right, now you do that.
I'll say it again. It is so good to be here.
And it's so good to have you back.
To my favorite people.
Oh, my goodness. You took my next line because my other favorite person in the room right now is Mr. Martin Randall Martin, the Martin AV Services, and Mr. Randall Martin. Well, Alan, too, activists and advocates, Mr. Martin, a micro-business, micro-businessman, and no stranger to Brightside family, and I'm glad to have you back. Say hello to the folks for me.
How's everybody doing out there in Radio Land? As you heard when we first started, the conversation, the hot conversation, has already begun and in progress. So you guys are in for a good show.
Yes, you are. So Amen. Listen, we are going to be back at you in a minute, and we're going to get in it. This is Black History Month, and we are going to get into what's going on with, you know, Black history. as I love what the young people are saying today, that Black history is American history. It's not just Black History Month. It's Black history is American history. And so we want to go into it a little bit, go a little deeper. And there is a brother from back in the day. He was back in the 60s, in the midst of the movement, the 60s and the 70s. And if you wanted to know about what was going on in the community and musically, then you knew this guy. This is a Mr. Curtis Mayfield and his song, Keep On Pushing.
Keep on pushing. I've got to keep on pushing. Mm-hmm. I can't stop now. Somehow, 'cause I've got my strength. Don't make sense not to keep on pushing. Now maybe someday, I'll reach that higher goal. I know I can make it with just a little bit of soul. 'Cause I've got my strength and it don't make sense not to keep on pushing. Now look a look, look a look, a look a yonder. What's that I see? A great big stone wall stands there ahead of me. But I've got my pride and I move the wall aside and keep on.
Hello, beloved. That was Mr. Curtis Mayfield. Keep on pushing. And beloved, we are here to keep pushing the conversation. And I invited my friends here. Been together about 20 years now, working in the community on various things for the cause. And so what better people could I have invited here today? Mr. Alan Skerritt and Mr. Randall Martin. So first of all, I want to do a shout out to Miss Janae Dubois. And she wrote a song for the television show The Jeffersons. Fish don't fry in the kitchen. Moving on up, right? Moving on up. And so my brothers, you know, we have had our first Black American or mixed American president. And we have several billionaires. We have, you know, hundreds more millionaires, certainly since the song for the Jeffersons, Moving On Up, was made and deposited into the psyches and the spirits of everybody in America, not just Black Americans. So we're moving on up. Do we still need to have Black History Month?
Absolutely. Black History Month really represents a glimpse and a small glimpse into the accomplishments that African-Americans have made in this country and continue to make in this country. And for such a long time, 400 years, those accomplishments were marginalized and not really recognized in a major way. So Black History Month is a great way to remind the country about the contributions that African Americans make and continue to make.
Remind the country and educate the country, I guess.
Well, some people don't know it to begin with, so you have to inform and remind. But I think especially in this time where there's such divisiveness, that we have to find and understand the value of all of us as people and try to understand that, you know, for a long time, not only was the knowledge of the accomplishments not really promulgated in the media, but you also had a lot of purposefully negative information. So now we're in a time where media is a lot more accessible and people can really read and understand the stories for themselves, but there's a lot of legacy of sort of misinformation that we've got to correct and stereotypical information that we have to sort of make right. And so I think Black History Month is not only, it should be practiced all year long, it's, you know, but it's highlighted in February. But as you say, Black History Month is really American history and should be really part of the curriculum and part of our belief and our ethos all year long. It just, we happen to make February a specific dedicated time.
Brother Alan, you want to contribute to the conversation?
Well,
Thank you, Randall.
I think I agree with everything Randall said. I'm just going to take for the sake of, you know, diversity to share another aspect of it. I think very often that sometimes celebrating, in this day and age, celebrating Black history through the media that we now have available to us has been, to some degree, detrimental to the successes that Black Americans who live in this country as second-class citizens, which is something that I would like us to talk a little bit more about today if we can. But I think sometimes the media has made things worse for us in many ways other than our culture of black and white, but has brought things to the forefront that, for example, in this book, White Fragility, that I brought today for you to read, talks about how sometimes the exposure brings out the worst in some people. The exposure of blackness and racism brings out the worst in the conscious and unconscious thinking of both white and black people. the defensiveness, the rage, and all the negative feelings and thoughts and behaviors that don't really get sorted out from community to community. We have red and blue states, for example. How do they celebrate Black America in the red states? What is their, if I may, heart of hearts perception of what celebrating Black History Month is all about? So I think it's those kinds of things that we should probably study a bit more and talk more about.
Which is why I wanted to take this opportunity in Black History Month, because it sort of like gives us license to have the conversation, right? You know, and next month, you know, be like, you know, why y'all talking about that? You know, which goes to the point about Dr. Robin DiAngelo's work in White Fragility, you know, and that, you know, brings me to something I wanted to bring into the conversation as well. So United States of America is made up of a lot of different cultures, a lot of different people groups that have come here as refugees and immigrants, right? And so, for instance, one of the things we were talking about, which brought us to having this time together here in the studio, is a self-determination. And so those who came here as Italians, you know, or Irish, or, you know, Chinese or whatever, Middle Easterners, you know, say, yeah, well, we came with self-determination. We came to make something of ourselves and something out of nothing. And so, you know, when you talk about the heart of hearts of people who are not of color, not Black or brown people, especially not Black African-Americans or Black Caribbean people who have a different, our story in the fabric of this country is different. So our work in self-determination had different kind of roots. It had different kind of obstacles. It had different kind of challenges. And not only the ancestry, the legacy of our ancestors in terms of self-determination and what they had to deal with and what they had to overcome, but that those systems are still here. I think we were talking about community structures. And so you want to say something about that? Because I know you were talking about that, Randall, community structures.
Well, I just want to jump back to just a little bit of a clarification. Because, you know, most immigrant groups that have come here, and immigrants are a sort of extraordinary people, and they come with a mindset of, I'm going to make it a better life in a new place. But when we look at the African-American experience, especially in the beginning of the country, we were kidnapped. Our ancestors were brought here involuntarily. And when they got here, they were indoctrinated into a system of brutality and exploitation for 400 years. So the level at which we talk about self-determination didn't exist for them. You know, those decisions of where they were going to work and where they were going to live and even their family structure was being decided in one of the most cruelest institutions ever built around the world. And people say, well, you know, we all have different struggles. And it's funny when we have these conversations, even with some of my church brothers, that, you know, you get this reaction where people say, well, you know, my group, you know, my group has been oppressed and every group has been oppressed. And that is true that many groups have had struggles. But here in America.
And in the Caribbean.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. But we have to recognize what has happened here because we're here and say, this is the legacy. This is what's happened. And that, again, for 400 years, people that were inside the system of slavery, and there were some free African-Americans, but that was very few, were not able to build generational wealth, were not able to even be justly rewarded for their efforts.
Or acknowledged for their contributions. And also, I want to add into that, when I say about self-determination, they had a determination that they were not going to die.
Right, just to
survive. They had a determination that one day we're going to be free. And it may not be me, but as a people. And it may not be me, but my children. It may not be my children, but my grandchildren. You know, there was a strength and a determination. Otherwise, because listen, the Europeans and the Pilgrims, they tried to use the Indians, right?
Right.
Tried to use the Japanese, you know. It didn't work, you know. They were dying in the fields. They were dying out, right? So But there was a determination. So when I say self-determination, and there were those who rebelled, you know? Those stories don't get told in American history, that there were those who were determined to overthrow those shackles,
but
right?
There's a reason for that. There's a reason why they don't get told. And those are the reasons we need to explore and talk more about. Why does the behavior of shame manifest so subtly in the communities of white people when thinking about the experience of its seeing itself as supremacist and seeing black Americans? I like to use the term black Americans. I don't like the term African Americans. I'm an American, first of all. I'm a black American. Africans are the ones that sold me into slavery.
Some of them.
But they did it. I don't know some of them. I can't pinpoint it was them there or them there, but they were the ones that took me from my country, my homeland, and sold me over here. So I'm not terribly proud of being a descendant of African Americans, no more than I'm as proud of being a descendant of Native Americans, although my parents were, you see. So who my mother, who comes right here from Hudson. But what I'm trying to say here is that we need to look more at, if people are going to call us African Americans, I'd like to call them European Americans. See, they don't get to be, that stigma thing, they don't get to be Americans while we get to be African Americans, because that right there separates us from them, puts us into a certain class of person to identify with as those who are African Americans, second class people, and those who are just Americans, and they're the supremacist first class people. So rhetorically, not for the sake of my heart of hearts again, I don't like to use the term African Americans. I acknowledge it, but I'm a black man, and I want to be called a black man. If you want to be just called a white man, well then fine. Call me a black man, I'll call you a white man. You're going to call me an African American, I'm going to call you a European American.
Well, I think that's valid. However, it's a different sort of perspective. And as I was alluding to, you know, while we have a shared history with immigrants, our experience is different. Mm-hmm. And as you just, you know, spoke about, I mean, for me, when I say African American, it is acknowledging the sort of cultural heritage that was stolen and misconstrued. And remember, there's more to the story, and that's why this is such a deep and important conversation, because there were, early on, there were Africans that were sold to
the Dutch,
to the Dutch. Mm-hmm. But then after that, people were stolen.
Mm-hmm, right.
So the proportion of who was sold and who was stolen and kidnapped is hard to find. So even though we can find fault and maybe some of the people who inadvertently sold their brethren into slavery, that might have been warriors from a different tribe or people from a different army at that time. Mm-hmm. You know, the bulk of the people that were the captives were stolen. And so, yes, we are black, you know, in hue and in color, but I think that we can't divorce ourselves of that. We are African, you know, Americans. We came from Africa. The whole country, the whole world, you know, in terms of population, originated in Africa, but our genetic structure is...
Well, now, melanin content, you know.
The whole thing is African.
Right. Okay.
I want to jump into here with a point on which I kind of agree with you, Alan, is that I use the term most often black African American, because a white person from Africa who lives in America, who has become an American citizen, is an African American. So, I use the term black African American to acknowledge that I have a different experience, you know, experientially, my ancestry out of the South and out of the Caribbean, and even some Native American had a different experience dealing with people who were whiter in skin. Dr. Leon Sullivan, Reverend Dr. Leon Sullivan, and I don't know, I submitted an article to the Insider, and they said it would be out tomorrow, so hopefully look for it. It's three people I would invite to dinner for Black History Month. Three people I would invite for dinner. And one of those was Reverend Dr. Leon Sullivan. And another thing that's not taught in our school systems is about Reverend Dr. Leon Sullivan. Mm-hmm. Most people that I engage and ask about him don't know who he is or who he was. Among his many accomplishments, he was the architect of the Sullivan Principles. And the Sullivan Principles were 13 rules or 13 requirements that South African government had to meet in order to have sanctions against them removed because of apartheid. And so in Africa, and particularly in South Africa, he has been recognized as instrumental in bringing down apartheid because of the Sullivan Principles. And there's more about his story, and people can Google him and that kind of thing. But one of the things he wanted to accomplish, he started what was called the African-American Summits, and he would take black people from the African diaspora, I should say, to Africa, professionals and et cetera and so forth, to try and help our brothers and sisters there to realize, you know, some successes and some connections and networks and things like that. But what he wanted to accomplish was that the same way Irish Americans have an affinity for Ireland and Italian Americans have an affinity for Italy, he wanted Black African Americans to have an affinity for Africa, you know. And so, you know, because what has happened with all the other stuff that has happened to our community, our culture being taken, our language being taken, our connections in terms of family and things like that, is that we don't relate to Africa, you know, overall. More so now since the 70s, I guess. But, you know, prior to that, you know, we saw Tarzan, and, you know, and even now when we talk about world hunger, you always see little Black African children with bugs flying all around their heads. You know, we don't look at the systems in Africa that are functioning, you know, well. But so he wanted us to have an affinity towards Africa. So in that regard, I do take pride in being a Black African American, and I do take pride in not just me, but I do take pride. Another thing that I've written is I am the daughter of a former slave. You know, I'm a daughter of a former slave, and I take pride in that. Mm-hmm. And so, but you know what? It's getting deep, and I got to take a pause for the cause. We're at WGXC Acre Catskill Hudson 90.7 FM, and this is listener-supported radio for open ears. And I'm so glad we have people here who have their ears open to these kinds of conversations, open ears and open hearts. We all bleed the same. I want to bring a little music to the message here right now. This is Miss Mandisa again.
Woke up today, another headline, another innocent life is taken in the name of hatred. So hard to take, and if we think that it's all good, then we're mistaken, 'cause my heart is breaking. Tell it, DC. Are you left, are you right, pointing fingers, taking sides? When are we gonna realize we all and the clothes they're wearing, or the color of their skin. Are you black? Are you white? Are we all the same inside? Father, open our eyes to see. We all bleed the same. We're all beautiful when we come together. We all bleed the same.
Father God, I pray that our families will come together right now and seek your face. You will forgive our sins and you'll heal our incredible land. In the name of the only Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen.
And we're back. That was Miss Mandisa, joined by Mr. Kirk Franklin in a prayer for help. We need help. We've been having these conversations, and we've been freely having these conversations, mind you, because for hundreds of years, we couldn't have these kind of conversations. You'd get blinded, you'd get maimed, you'd get lynched, you'd get, you know, whatever.
Right.
Well, there's different forms of lynching today, and you know, and sometimes we do have to pay prices for being bold enough to...
Getting shot in the back is a form of lynching.
Getting shot in the
Shot in the back by a police officer is a form of lynching, yeah.
Or,
so one of the different
Or being blacklisted, not being able to work, not being able to make an employment because, you know what, you got out of line, you rocking the boat,
Discrimination is what that is.
And also, as we talked about, you know, being an engineer, you know, the technology that's happening today and a lot of the digital discrimination that's happening online that you can't even see, the algorithms that are happening, which are segregating people in ways that you wouldn't even recognize, whether it be discrete niche Facebook groups and all these other activities in which exclude some and encourage the participation of others. So, you know, the legacy has changed in terms of the way that it's being manifested, but it's also there. And I think that as we were talking, the discussion has to move from not just what happened, because we have to understand that, but also what can we do to move forward?
Which brings us into Professor Robin DiAngelo's work, among others. But her book and her YouTube workshop is what, you know, rang dings for me and made me give snaps and claps. And Alan, you had, when I called you and was bringing up this this titled work, you were like, oh, I have that book. So talk about what Ms. DiAngelo, Professor DiAngelo is doing.
What she's done, and I have to admit, I haven't totally read her book because, you know, I'm the kind of person, I read a book about things of the nature of people causing harm to other people, I get so full of rage, I just can't continue reading the book. And I've been that way since I was a child. And I read some of the excerpts from the book and some of the chapters, and I certainly get where she's coming from. And she has a very brilliant sense, insight into the dynamics between whites and blacks around the issues of race. And she calls it white fragility because of the inability and vulnerability that white people feel to actually experience their own sense of feeling and behavior about racism. Sometimes being made to think of your own racism can make you feel very bad about yourself. So who wants to feel bad about themselves? No one. So they find ways to justify the way they think and the way they feel, or the way they meld into a whole community perspective towards people of color. She makes one example of people who live in suburbs who don't feel any sense that they've had no particular contact or communication with people of color. Therefore, that they're not racist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's as simple as that. And they believe that like it's a religion. So, and there are so many hundreds of thousands of thoughts that go through people's minds that helps them justify and have peace with their own feelings towards people of color or ones who are different than them, ones that they see themselves as superior to, ones that they see them as second-class citizens. So therefore, the perspective of them being a second-class citizen is basically normalized in our society. And so everyone kind of, well, what what's the matter with you people kind of thing. Let me just read this. It's one person's comment. In this groundbreaking and timely book, Anti-Racist Educator, Robin DiAngelo deftly illuminates the phenomenon of white fragility, referring to the defensive moves that white people make when challenged racially. White fragility is characterized by emotions such as anger, fear, and guilt, and by behaviors including argumentation and silence. These behaviors, in turn, function to reinstate white racial equilibrium and prevent any meaningful cross-racial dialogue. Very important point there. In this in-depth examination, DiAngelo explores how white fragility develops, how it protects racial inequality, and what we can do to engage more constructively.
I remember, and I think for me that's a bridge into what you were saying, Randall, is that, you know, we have to look at, okay, now what do we do? And what one of the things that Dr. DiAngelo says is that it's really what white people are going to do, because it's like being in an ocean and saying you're not wet. You know, it's like, you know, you're in this system. You can't say that you're not. This system that has been structured to protect itself, even. I was reading, and we were talking about Lizzo a minute ago. I was reading an article online the other day, you know, Black History writing. It was this young girl. She's mixed. Matter of fact, she says she's three quarters white. Her father is mixed. Her mother is white. And she grew up in a small town, and she was like the only person of color in her school. She was in high school. Only person of color in her school. And she said, and, you know, when she was smaller, you know, it really didn't show that much. But mm-hmm. as she began to develop, she said her nose and her hips and her lips, you know, everything started to change. And she really started to not like herself. And she was told by some of her classmates, people in school, that she had to pick a side. Now, you have big mixed race children as well.
I do. And, you know, I think that in this conversation, what ends up happening is once people get defensive, then people don't hear. They just want to be heard. And so, like, the kind of book that white fragility and the kind of issues that are brought up is kind of the first step, because we have to learn how to have those conversations.
Well, can I just get back to this lady's story?
Yes.
Because one of the issues that she has that I want to put out there, because we have a lot of mixed race couples here, around the country actually, but here mm-hmm. in Hudson as well, mm-hmm. and mixed race children. And you know, everybody seems to be getting along fairly well. You know, we don't have race riots and things like that. But people may not be aware of what their children are going through, you know. And to be able to, so, you know, she was told that she had to pick a side, right? And it's like, pick a side, you know. I mean, I'm mixed. So that's one thing. If we want to deal with racism and shape the conversation, you know, we have to educate our kids. If we're going to pick a side, it's the human race. You know, don't put that on. And then the standard of beauty. We were talking about Lizzo. You know, she said when she went to college, she said, and then when she was in college, she was in a more diverse population. So then she began to appreciate her hips and her lips and her thick thighs and her muscular frame, you know, because she was in a community where the standard of beauty was something else, right? And so we were talking about Lizzo, and, you know, I was saying, you know, listen, Lizzo, you doing your thing, praying for you, girl, you know, not hating on Lizzo, you know. But I was saying how I kind of understood the statement she was making. It's like, I'm not going to buy into. And you all have some different perspectives that, you know, right, you know. But my thing was, she was, I'm not going to buy into the standard or model of beauty that has been put out there, because I'm not built that way, you know. I got thick legs, I got thick butts, I got thick breasts, I got thick everything, you know. That's part of, you know, my cultural heritage, and it's beautiful to me. And I saw her decisions in that vein, is that she was like shaking off those shackles. You guys, or at least you, Randall, had a different take on it, and, well, I think it's valid too.
Well, I've had those talks with my children, you know, many talks about race, about culture, and you know, and their understanding. And, you know, and fortunately, where America's headed, just demographically, is going to be a lot more of those brown kids. And I often look at my kids, and, you know, you can see my kids, and you don't know whether my kids are from the Middle East or African American or just, you know, they're just brown. You know,
well,
like
that's
so
what
many.
This young lady said as well. She would say, people would ask her, well, what are you, Filipino? And she'd say, yeah. And she said, whatever they said I am, that's what I would say yeah to, because, you know. But, I mean, we got to get away from that somehow. But
Well, I think what's happening is that hopefully the hope is, at least for me, is that they can now chart a new level of standards of beauty and inclusiveness and start to break down some of those barriers, because now, at the end of the day, they're just people. And people want to be appreciated for who they are. And as we talked about Martin Luther King, we both participated in that program. People want to be judged by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin, or not by some hierarchical institutionalized system that rewards some and punishes others. And as we start to have these conversations about what the system and what thinking is in various cultures, we have to be able to be open and honest. To have, you know, to understand what exists, but also understand where we're going. And that where we're going is cultures where we're just simply going to have to understand, like in Hudson, the little microcosm in Hudson, that, you know, we have this opportunity to now redefine what America is, what it looks like, what's beautiful. And this is the conversation that at the has to be had.
Okay, so Alan and I were having a conversation the other day, and Alan said, look, I've been at this for 30 years. I'm tired, okay? You know, I've been at this here for 20 years. I'm tired, right? So, you know, one of the things that when we're talking about white fragility is that we got to get past conversation and start doing some work, you know?
Right, well, we can't have those conversations. You see, you know, if those conversations have to be had in certain communities and then we could come to the table, that's one thing. But
we've been talking for 30 years.
You know, I think we need to begin to take some risks here.
Yes.
It's more than 30 years. I'm 83 years old. My grandparents are up in that damn cemetery up there, okay? I'm 83, so my grandparents came from Hudson. This is their home. I spent summers here as a child. I spent 1 year here in school. I came back here to work in 1989, and I've been here ever since. What I'm seeing in Hudson is the normalization of racism and oppression that are instituted, sustained, maintained, and sustained by the institutions that service people under the flags of health, education, and welfare. Okay? Period. And nobody seems to want to talk about it. It's just a normal way that things are in Columbia County. We have a stench of a Columbia County Board of Supervisors. Just walk into their den where they meet once in a while and see what kind of experience do you get. You will smell something that's very awful in that room. Go down here to the Hudson City Council meetings. It's like going into a sandbox, okay? These are not things that are happening in this county and city that have in any way a methodology of addressing, opening a dialogue between those who oppress and those who are oppressed with each other. It doesn't happen. And it seems to be constructed not to happen. And until it happens, we're not going to move anywhere. It'll be the same way after I'm up there in the cemetery myself, and my children, God forbid they come anywhere near here, will be there too.
Well, the thing of it is that, you know, this is what's happening in America. We don't get anything. I don't know, Mr. Angelo, you know, but there's a lot of work that's being done on this issue of white fragility and why it's so hard for white people to even talk about racism. But she goes on beyond just talking about racism, actually to understanding and unlocking how our country and our social structures have been constructed to protect racism.
Well, you know, I'm a bit more optimistic. Yeah. You know,
I don't know. I'm the perpetual optimist.
Yeah,
here,
yeah.
Bro.
I'm a bit more optimistic about this.
I'm on the other side.
Because you know, I think that again, because the population changes, and shows like this where we're actually having a chance to start talking about having these conversations, talking about tools that help enable these conversations to happen without the defensiveness and without sort of the cloak of, you know, I have to defend my interests, which is what's happening in this sort of balkanization of America where everyone's thinking, okay, well, we don't have a common interest. We have separate interests. And we have to get back to one of our common interests and have that conversation. And, you know, the thing I like about Hudson is that we do have different cultures mixing, and we kind of do have a common goal in having a quality of life where we understand that working together has to be the norm. And it's not perfect by any stretch of imagination. But I think that it's an evolving conversation, and we have to continue to figure out creatively how we can have these conversations. And, you know, like you said, you know, we're older. And, you know, a lot of this conversation has to happen with our youth.
Age is just a number, honey.
Well.
60 is the new 40.
That is what I said. But I just got two other, and part of this, and I just want to add just a quick plug, you know, I, and you guys participate, or at least Alan has, you know, one of the things that helps that conversation is the international dinner. Mm-hmm. Which is a mm-hmm. great time for people to get together mm-hmm. and have conversations and meet people that they don't normally meet and have those sort of conversations and sort of have this cross-cultural connection.
I like the idea of giving people tools to work with when they leave the conversation, like
yep.
white fragility, or like the book Don't Call Me a Racist, which I presented here 20 years ago. And oh my goodness, I wasn't ready for the white lash behind that. I thought I was helping. Don't call me a racist. It's clear you don't understand that this, what you're saying and what you're doing and how you're thinking is racist. And here's a tool to help you.
Well, here's another tool. There's a big event happening here in April. And it deals with racism, and it's actually by a Michael DiTuano.
I wasn't sure if it was DiAntuno or
I have his phonetic spelling. And he's Italian, so it's DiTuano is the way.
Okay.
And so he's pretty renowned. He's called the Rockwell of the Resistance. And he's going to bring an exhibit into town, which is a perfect opportunity for us to have this conversation. There's going to be an event at Club Helsinki, which is like a pre-event. And his art deals directly with racism and how it has affected and infected America. And it's a great time to have this conversation about what's happening. And then the actual art exhibit is going to be the art exhibit is on the 4th. I'm sorry, on the Saturday, which is the 4th of April, and the pre-event where Malcolm Nance, a WAMC commentator, is going to be down. He's going to be here on April 3rd at Club Helsinki. And the whole idea of this is to really galvanize us to have these conversations. And the art pieces are very provocative. If you take a look at his website, which is artandresistance.com, and you look under racism, you can see his paintings, which are great conversation starters in terms of how we're going to deal with the as you say, the stench of racism that remains on America, and how are we going to be able to really navigate this, and for the sake of our children, be able to help them navigate this and build this community that I believe Hudson can and should be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I God willing to say the same, I will be in the studio on April 1st.
Okay.
So maybe we can get him to call in, or if he's in town, come in.
I think that would be great.
That would be great. That yes. would be great. We're going to have to
add something before
yes,
we
sir.
Go off. I just want people who are listening out there and hearing us that racism presents itself in a variety of venues. You know, I'm one who looks at things from a biopsychosocial perspective. And you have to add a political, although that somehow is inherited in the social. But there are so many different ways in which we can analyze, you know, racial behaviors in terms of our development to a place where we have arrived at today. So we have discussed a couple of them today, but you may say to yourself, well, why haven't they talked about A, B, or C? Well, because we would need several hours on the radio
several weeks
to bring all those things that may be on your consciousness and awareness to your, you know. But just know, we do think of them, we do live them, we do experience them on a daily basis, and at some point we'll find a way to get to you to have these discussions with you beyond today.
Listeners, I hope we've given you some food for thought, some inspiration, some motivation. It certainly was my intent to share what I think is a very dynamic conversation that I get to have with these two thinkers and movers and makers. And, well, white fragility is a real thing. Racism. You know, I wanted to get a song in, and I'm going to get a song in, but I want to tell very quickly this story. You know, I was in this agency, and we had a leadership retreat, and one of the leaders in the agency decided to do a workshop on racism. And I was, you know, some of us were elated about it, you know, and oh my goodness, one of the women at the office in a high-level position was irate. Why did she do, yes, white fragility. Why did she do this? We're not racist. I'm not a racist. You know, you know, I have best friends and I went to school with and I know so-and-so and I do this and I do that. And I said, you know, there's no way I can say this to you that's not going to sound offensive, but it is not my intention to offend you. But this is not about you. It's not about you, who you had friends or who you went to school with. This is about something that is woven into American system. And until we even begin to recognize that, which she does a remarkable job of unpacking, until we begin to recognize that and not get so offended or even offended by having a room full of black people having a conversation. We have to have places to have the conversation, beloved. It's not an insult to you. It's not against you. We're not plotting against you. if you're not a black African-American or someone of that ancestry. But we need to have conversations that, you know, we can't spend a lot of time just trying to explain why we even have to have the conversation. So love us. We love you. Amen. We just want us all to be better and to be healthier, be happier, and to have an opportunity. I want to thank my guests for coming in today. And listen, I want you to be well. Remember, I don't care how many clouds there may be, how gray or dark the sky, there's a bright side somewhere. You hang in there. I'm hanging in there.
We love you.
My haters, I'm hanging in there. God's got me.
Thank you, Hudson.
Let's heal the world, beloved. Let's heal the world. This is MJ taking us out of here. Well, maybe taking us out of here. If the intro isn't that long.